10 Practices for the Liminal Space by Heather Platt. We are now a couple of months into the Great Pause. We've baked all the bread, learned to cut our own hair, logged too many hours on Zoom, built elaborate islands on Animal Crossing, adapted to the new protocol at the grocery store, rewatched our favorite series on Netflix, and here we are, just waiting for when this might end. Waiting, as Dr. Seuss says, for a train to go, or a bus to come, or a plane to go, or the mail to come, or the rain to go, or the phone to ring, or the snow to snow, or waiting around for a yes or no, or waiting for their hair to grow. How do we stay in this waiting place when there's still so much we don't know about what's on the other side? How do we maintain our sense of well-being and not spiral into despair and fear when we don't yet know when we can see our loved ones, gather with our communities, or send our kids back to school? Here are some of my thoughts about ways to sustain ourselves in the midst of liminal space. Number one, soothe your flooded nervous system. There's a reason why so many of us are baking bread and why I haven't been able to find any yeast in the grocery store for the last few weeks. In my home, it's my daughter's baking bread and I just have to buy the ingredients. Bread is comfort food and we all need soothing when we've been living in this state of heightened anxiety and uncertainty. But bread can't be the only thing we turn to for soothing, nor can wine or chocolate or Netflix, as much as that might be tempting right now. A soothing technique can quickly become a way of bypassing or numbing if we rely on it too heavily. My new friend, Dr. Robin Youngson, recently introduced me to a practice that has become my favorite soothing technique. It's called Havening Touch, and it's designed to mirror the way that a mother soothes a distressed infant, except you can do it for yourself. There's a series of three soothing caresses that you repeat, running your hands down your arms, rubbing your hands together, and stroking your face with both hands. You can watch Dr. Youngson demonstrate Havening Touch on his website. Number two, name and grieve the ambiguous losses. An ambiguous loss, a term coined by researcher Pauline Boss, is a loss that occurs without closure or clear understanding. It's the kind of loss that is felt when a child is abducted and the parents don't know whether they're dead or alive, or the loss of a marriage when the other person is still alive and yet you grieve the loss of what you once dreamed the marriage would be. Or, as my friends on Facebook shared, the kind of mixed emotions that a parent might feel when a child undergoes gender transition. You can listen to Pauline Boss talk about it on a podcast on being. We are all experiencing multiple ambiguous losses right now as we wait to see what the new normal will be. Not only can we not do many of the things we're used to doing, we really have no idea when we can do them again and whether they'll look the same when we do. If you're a churchgoer, for example, will you have to sit 6 feet away from your friends in the sanctuary and avoid hugging them or shaking their hands? Will you get to go dancing with friends or sing in choirs, or will that have to wait until there's a vaccine? What about your job? Will it be waiting for you, or will you face unemployment? It's okay to grieve those losses. Even though you might be inclined to shame yourself for having less significant losses than the people who are losing family members, your loss is legitimate. Let yourself grieve. You might even want to develop some kind of ritual to mark those losses. When I talked about an ambiguous loss on Facebook, Lori Marie Boyer said that she has a practice she calls List and Sit. Quote, I'm keeping a list of what we are missing and sitting with it for a bit each time as a way to just keep naming and honoring, end quote. It seems like a good way to grieve and release. Number three, discharge built up energy without aiming it at anyone. The frustration can build when there is so much outside of your control and you don't know when this will all end. When, for example, you've got young kids in your house all day, every day, and you've suddenly become their parent, their teacher, their playmate, and their therapist, you might feel like a pressure cooker about to explode. Or when you're not sure if your business will survive, or if the money will reach to the end of the month, or if the sick family member you're not allowed to visit will get better, the tension in your body can feel like too much to bear. Despite your best efforts at self-soothing, in those moments you might find yourself fighting with people on Facebook or yelling at your kids or throwing your wine glass across the room. That's when you might need some fairly aggressive, but not harmful, activity to help you release the tension. Try pounding your feelings into something that won't bear the scars. Go dig in the garden or dance vigorously or swing a hammer or wash the floor or go for a run or scream into a pillow. I have a particular fondness for power tools, partly for this reason. They let me be aggressive without harming anyone. I also like to jump in my car, go for a drive, and at the top of my lungs, sing, cry, scream to the song Nothing Stays the Same by Luke Sutel Singh. Quote, cry your eyes out, fill your lungs up. We all hurt, we all lie, and nothing stays the same. End quote. Number 4, practice impermanence. One of the things that this pandemic is teaching us is that impermanence of that which we assume we can rely on. For those of us living in developed countries, and especially those living without disabilities, we've come to assume the accessibility and reliability of things like grocery stores, doctor's offices, restaurants, churches, etc. We've also come to assume that we can visit our elderly parents whenever we want to and that our children can go to school every day. It's a shock to the system when what you rely on is taken away. Some of us may already be adapted to that, those who are disabled or who grew up in poverty or conflict zones. But for many of us, this is fairly new and unfamiliar, and it can be quite scary. I remember the first time I went to the grocery store after the new social distancing rules were in place. It felt a little like I'd landed on the moon instead of my neighborhood grocery store. Having a practice that embraces that sense of impermanence is helpful in processing all of this and learning to let go of attachment to the illusion of certainty. This is something I learned from the Buddhist teachings on impermanence, that to practice an art form in which you detach from what you produce and simply be fully present for the process is to better accept the impermanence of the world. Consider the way that Buddhist monks make elaborate sand mandalas and then sweep them away and pour the sand into a body of water. In my basement is a large canvas where I practice what I call my messy covert art process, which I shared about in an earlier post. Every few days when I feel anxiety or frustration build, I go to the basement and paint, with my hands, another layer onto the canvas. I focus only on the process and always end up covering up whatever might be pleasing to the eye. I intend to continue this as long as we are confined to our homes. I don't know yet what I'll do with it then. Perhaps I'll burn it. Number 5, nurture the seeds that want to grow. Perhaps by now, after the initial shock and stress of this has settled somewhat, you're beginning to wonder how this great pause will change your life, our culture, and perhaps our relationship with the natural world. Maybe you've now got some space in your brain not just for survival, but for curiosity and possibility. Maybe you've become inspired to start new art projects or to create new ways of gathering people online, projects that aren't just about surviving the here and now, but that might help us live into a new future beyond COVID-19. A few days ago, I co-hosted a call with my former participants of my in-person workshops in the Netherlands, and I sensed a different energy than any of the calls I've had since this all started. Though there was still some grief present, I sensed that people were beginning to imagine the new things that can grow out of this time of disruption. A few days later, a similar thing happened on the calls from my Holding Space practitioner program. There's a shift, and people are beginning to see hope and not just despair. When you feel ready for it, bring your beginner's mind, another Buddhist teaching which refers to an attitude of openness, eagerness, and lack of preconceptions when studying a subject, to bear. Look around you at how your life has been disrupted and notice the ways that you don't want to go back to how things were before disruption. Consider that after COVID-19, you might have a new opportunity to choose how you want to live and interact with the culture around you. Maybe you have new ideas to contribute to your neighborhood about how to organize around local needs and local capacity. Maybe you're beginning to imagine a more equitable way for your business to function or your church to serve its people. We don't have to go back to the way things were before. We have this opportunity to imagine something new into existence. To foster this practice, first bring awareness to what's growing and where you can plant and or nurture seeds to grow. If you live in the Northern Hemisphere where it's now spring, you might want to play in the garden or wander through the park taking pictures of new leaves and baby geese. Number 6, find circles that can hold space for complexity. People are at different stages of this journey and have different levels of capacity for holding space for the complexity of this time. Some of us, because of necessity or trauma or fear, can function only in survival mode, getting through what's needed day to day, and can't hold space for grief or for the kind of transformation and possibility mentioned above. Those may not be the people you'll turn to for deep conversations or for wrestling through the emotions or questions that are surfacing. But some people, particularly those who have navigated challenging life circumstances in the past and have learned to meet those challenges with curiosity and openness, have great capacity for holding shadow, grief, fear, transformation, anticipation, loss, and birth. Turn to those people. Gather them in circles for storytelling, deep conversation, and imaginative dreaming. Invite them into the depths with you. Feel the complexity of your feelings together. Dare to be playful with new ideas and notice how your body and heart are transformed in the process. Yesterday, I sat on 2 calls with the participants of the Holding Space Practitioner Program, and I marveled at what beautiful things that can show up on Zoom calls when there is a strong container in place that can hold complexity, curiosity, and depth. We are nearing the end of this 8-month program, and I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that the capacity that these people from all over the world are growing, and I along with them, is exactly what is needed for times like this. Note, this program will be reopening in July under the new banner of the Center for Holding Space. Number 7, release, receive, return. I have found myself more often than usual visiting the labyrinth this spring. Partly I go because that's the place where I notice the earliest signs of spring and it gives me a sense of hopefulness. It's near a pond where the frogs begin to sing as soon as the ice melts, and there are wild crocuses that are the first flowers to bloom on these northern prairies. The other reason I go is because the labyrinth teaches me one of the most useful spiritual practices for a time such as this. It teaches me to release as I walk into the labyrinth, to empty myself of the burdens, expectations, fears, disappointments, etc., that want to cling to my spirit and drag me down. It teaches me to receive as I stand at the center of the labyrinth, to allow in the voices of spirit, the earth, and my own soul, which are often stifled in my crowded life. And it teaches me to return as I leave the labyrinth, to take with me all of the gifts that were entrusted to me at the center and carry them back to my village, to the people I've been called to serve. When I can't get to the labyrinth, I try to spend time focusing on my breath, reminding myself of the same 3-part process. Or I use a finger labyrinth, like the one I made in a former blog post, which you can find online. To stay grounded at a time when the world feels wobbly and unreliable takes extra commitment and determination. It also takes a combination of the above practices, self-soothing or discharging when necessary, so that you can be more fully present for the mindfulness of the release, receive, and return. Number 8, don't forget to laugh. When I was growing up and Reader's Digest arrived monthly in our home, I remember flipping to the section called Laughter is the Best Medicine and reading through the jokes people had sent in. Back then, I just thought it was a cute title, but now I understand the truth of it. Laughter doesn't just boost your mood by releasing endorphins. It helps to diminish pain and strengthen your immune system. Regularly finding time for laughter also helps you to cope with the needs of your children, and it gives you a higher tolerance for the frustrations of dealing with red tape or opinionated people on Facebook. My extended family gathers occasionally on Zoom, and we've had some good laughs over online versions of Pictionary or our former fashion choices in old photos of our rare family trip to California. Apparently, I had a penchant for tucking my pant legs into my socks back then. My daughters and I have been sharing some laughs while we make our way through old seasons of New Girl on Netflix. Even in the midst of deep grief and fear, laughter has a place. It doesn't just offer temporary relief, it helps strengthen you and make you more resilient to cope with the hard stuff. Number 9, focus on what's right in front of you and do the next right thing. The world is a big place and it can feel overwhelming to open the floodgates of social media and let it all come in. When your news feed is full of stories of heartache from all over the world and you're hearing the voices of politicians and scientists and each one seems to have a different opinion, the complexity of this situation can knock you flat. Whose voice do you listen to? Which expert has your best interests at heart? Whose stories do you let into your heart? Well, I don't think it's wise to keep your head in the sand too long, lest you lose touch with the world and begin to think only of yourself. There are times when you have to shut out the rest of the world and just be in your own little bubble. There are times when the best you can do is get out of bed in the morning and make your family something to eat. Narrow your focus when you need to and ignore the needs or concerns of anyone outside of your home. Feed your cat, play with your kids, or curl up with a good book and look after nobody but yourself. One of the best decisions that I made at the beginning of the pandemic was to stay offline entirely on Sundays. I've kept it up for 2 months and I intend to continue even after life settles into the new normal. I did it at the beginning because I noticed how much my mental load I was carrying by the end of the week, trying to focus on my kids' needs, my own needs, my clients' needs, and my business's needs, while also trying to process all of the new information and anxiety surrounding the pandemic. Even after my initial anxiety and overwhelm had settled, though, I realized how much I appreciated the peacefulness that a day off the internet gave me. Number 10, extend kindness to yourself and others. It may seem cliché to focus on kindness, but I believe that it's one of the things that will get us through this time. Kindness helps us turn our attention away from worry and frustration. Kindness helps us focus our energy on positive things instead of negative things. Kindness helps us build communities and bond families. When you focus on bringing someone a little spot of happiness or a moment of ease, you get back almost as much as you give. It's a win-win situation. Kindness might be sending an overwhelmed mom a gift certificate for a meal delivery service. Or it might be paying for the order of the car behind you in the drive-thru. Or it might be packaging up the books you've finished reading and sending them to a friend who's getting bored alone at home. Or it might simply be smiling at the neighbor on the sidewalk or letting a person cut in front of you at the grocery store lineup. In these unusual times, I think that it's also an act of kindness to wear a mask in public so that the person selling you groceries has one less chance of exposure. Or it might be tipping the food delivery person extra for the increased risk they're taking. Or it might simply be staying home to help decrease the spread and not overburden our healthcare workers. And don't forget that one of the people you should be extending kindness to is yourself. Recognize that you're under an unusual stress load right now, as we all are, and offer yourself compassionate care in any way that you can.